Before I begin this episode of Cut the Clutter, a disclaimer. The fact that I'm wearing a black colored kurta is purely coincidental, right? You've seen me wearing black colored kurtas in the past, and I do that often. This has nothing to do with what's going on in politics right now. There is no kala jadu, black magic. There is no protest, nothing. My principle is simple. You got it, flaunt it. So this is the kind of stuff I've got to flaunt. So I've got it. So once again, let me get that out of the way. Because these days, people have lost all sense of humor. Having said that, the subject we are talking about is very, very serious. That is about the employment situation today. But employment not in the sense that you might see in the papers and general discussion, that is how many unemployed people are there. This is a debate going forward. It's employability. And what strength does India have in terms of producing people of employability, and how many does it have? And you know, what have we got? We've got data. And we've got graphics. And the good thing is, or the great thing is, or maybe the lazy thing is, that we haven't even had to work on the graphics. We've got them on a platter. So I'd suggest you look at a Twitter handle called Trainomics, because this is the Twitter handle of a well-known, young, respected economist called Trin Nguyen. I hope I pronounce her name right, but if I don't, Trin, then I apologize. If you tell me how to pronounce it correctly, I shall repeat it 10 times as a teacher would have told us to do in school. Trin Nguyen is senior economist, Emerging Asia at Natixis. Natixis is kind of a think tank, a very reputed think tank. And in fact, in January this year, and that is something that we missed, in January this year, they produced what is called as a Youth Asia report, which basically looks at the younger countries in the Asia, countries where the population is still younger, getting younger, or maybe now beginning to age, compared to those countries where the population is either aged, say Japan, or where it's aging rapidly, say in China. So that report is worth looking at. I'm sharing a link with you. See the entire report. And what she's done now is, on her Twitter handle, she's put out a thread of tweets using graphics explaining India's prospects, not just for employment, but for growth, for manufacture-led exports, and for manufacture-led growth, and for manufacture-led employment. You know, Indian debate has been mired in a long time on growth. Is growth a good thing or a bad thing? First of all, how can growth be a bad thing? It says that we are a nutty country where we are afraid of two things. We are just so scared of two things. One, the dollar getting past 100 rupees to a dollar. And second, our growth going past 10%. We are the nuttiest people in the world. We have the fear of high growth. Array, growth means inequality. So she also tells you how you can get growth using data that also gets you employment. Because the big criticism of growth is that Indian growth has been growth without employment. So this is unemployed growth. This is growth which is not helping our unemployment situation. Now, the reason that's happening is, and you will see it from data, is because a lot of India's growth is coming from high-tech areas, services exports, very little manufacturing exports. Because when you have a factory, a big factory, where a lot of people are involved in manufacturing, then you create a lot of jobs. Now, these may not be very highly skilled jobs, or these may not be jobs employing people with engineering degrees or MBAs, but these are jobs nevertheless. And once people have jobs, they progress, and their children will progress, their families will progress. So India's bane has been India's inability to create manufacturing jobs. Now, what is it that Trin has figured out looking at data on India? Now, first of all, she says that, look, I'm giving you this thread, and this thread will run on the screen now as I'm talking, but also we'll be using graphics from it. I messaged her. I've got her permission, her concurrence to use these graphics. And thank you very much, Trin. This is a very eye-opening analysis, and I wish more of us in India were doing this, but thank you very much for doing this. And I would commend our listeners and viewers and readers to look at the other stuff she's doing and her institution is doing. She's also involved with Carnegie. Now, she says that she's looking at India's labor market, And there is too little data available from India. In India, we have this unfortunate cold war on data. I don't want to say war on data because there isn't that much evidence, but cold war in the sense that India's employment data has not been renewed since 2011. Our periodic surveys are not being done. Our census of 2021, all right, 21, there was an excuse of COVID, but even now, we are more than halfway through 2022. There is no sign of our census beginning. So our decennial census is also right now looking jeopardized. So in that situation, she says, she's got data from UN population figures, UN population statistics, from International Labour Organization, ILO, EPFO, that's our own Employees Provident Fund Organization, and CMIE, that is Mahesh Vyas-led company, Center for Monitoring of Indian Economy. If you might remember, Mahesh Vyas was our guest on Off the Cuff just the other day, just about 3 weeks back. So all of that she's picked up, and she's looked at this data in terms of working wage people to begin with. So see this graphic. So who are working wage people? Working wage people are not people in the labor force. They are people between the age of 15 to 64 who can work, or who can be looking for work. They are not necessarily looking for work, but this is just a number which is at least on paper employable, which means they can look for jobs. Anybody below 15 is a child, anybody over 64 should be a senior citizen, and not working should be. Not everybody follows that, you know that. Now, China, she says, China in 2020, that's today, and see the graphic. China today has about 1 billion people in this working age group. India is just a little shy of China. India just has a little less of China, or maybe a little more than a little less of China. China is, say, 100 crores right now. India at this point is 92.83 crores, let's say 93 crores round off. So India 93 crores in working age, China 100 crores in working age. Now what will happen in 2040? Because this analysis that she's done compares the 2020 situation with 2040 situation, 20 years away from now. She says in 2020, India will have 1.09 billion, which makes it 109 crore people in working age. That means people who can theoretically work, which means if you have jobs, those people notionally, theoretically can be available to fill your factories, fill your farms, fill whatever. China, on the other hand, in 2040, will have 98.9 crores. So let's say 99 crores, 989 million. So in 2040, India has almost 11, 12 crore more people in the working age than China. So this balance shifts. Again, look at this chart. Then you see India, China, Indonesia, Pakistan, Bangladesh, and the Philippines. And you see where this availability of working age populations will change in the course of time. And you will see that Japan's really low because, as we told you, Japan already has a very old population and it's now aging very, very, very fast. So once again, to repeat, these are not people in the labor market. These are just the number of people who are available, who are actively, these are not people in the labor market or people actively engaged in work or employment. These aren't people who are either employed or seeking employment. These are people who can be available because they are in that age group. So this is just a straightforward age group analysis. Come to the next point now, the literacy rate. Now you begin to look at the quality of your manpower. Manpower means human resources. Literacy rate, India is lower than China. India is fewer than China by 29 crores today. So of these nearly 93 crore people that India has, and of the 100 crore that China has, if you compare literate people, basic literacy, India has 29 crores less. So suppose you rule out those 29 crores from labor force. This is the next chart. Please look at the chart. This gives you the analysis of literate people in the working wage group. Now, if you look at labor force participation in India, It is obviously low because so many people are illiterate, so many people are not looking for jobs. So labor force participation in India is only 49%, which means of the 100 people in working age, 51 are not even looking for work. Only 49 are looking for work. In China, it's high. The fact is, India's labor force participation is the lowest among the major countries, important countries in Asia at 49%. Bangladesh is 50%, so marginally higher than India's. China, on the other hand, is 68%. So between 49% and 68% is a very big difference. So once again, India is a country where more than 50% are not even participating in the labor market. Now, you can see this chart that tells you the number of the Chinese who are not participating. You can see that's very small. That's a lighter color on the graphic. But on the Indian side, lots of them, that's a very large number, is not participating. So that is one setback for India, that it has a lot of people, but not everybody is in the labor market. Then you look at the next chart, Indians in the working wage group. So 46.4% are non-labor, right? We don't know, kaam kar raha hai, nahi kar raha hai, is just sitting on agricultural land, hanging out, playing cards, whatever. And you see a lot of it as you drive around the countryside in India, or you walk around the countryside. So 46% are non-labor. See this, this is a pie chart. So 46.4% is non-labor. 44% on this side are informal labor. So if 46.4% non-labor, 44% informal labor, that means kaam mila kar liya, yeah? Employed for a week, employed for 2 weeks, like that. Get salary at the end of the month, no welfare, no problem in front, etc. That's 44%. So how many, what percentage of Indian working wage group is holding formal jobs? Just 9.7%. That's very, very, very low. And that's one of the reasons why you see so much unemployment problem in India. This data, where does this data come from? This data comes from World Bank and ILO, and as Thrin points out to us, World Bank quotes ILO data, and ILO then makes its own estimate simply because numbers from India are not available since 2011. So this is a striking takeaway from this data point, because this tells us that a staggering number of people are employed in informal jobs in India. Now, what is the reason? Once again, if you read what Thrin is explaining, that maybe it's because India lacks really large firms, particularly large manufacturing firms, although we'll come to that in a minute, which employ a lot of people. Now, you might say Infosys, a Wipro, a TCS, these employ a lot of people. Yes, they do. But India is also a very large country, so they can employ maybe 500,000 people, maybe 1 million people between them, maybe 2 million people between them. But you are looking at a working wage population of 93 crores. So the scale has to be much larger. Also, it could be because of restrictive labor laws in India. And we know that Modi government had passed these labor codes, something that we had welcomed editorially. I had done an entire episode of Cut the Clutter on that. I will share a link with you, and a lot of you had watched it. Unfortunately, this has got stalled in center state tussles, and also I would say Modi government's loss of nerve after what happened with the farm reform bills. Now look at the chart, the next chart, and this tells you working age population growth from 2020 to 2040. Again, a very important chart. This tells you that in these 20 years, 2020 to 2040, India would add 162 million or 16.2 crore more people in the working wage group. I mean, just for comparisons, I'm bringing in Pakistan. Pakistan is much less of population than India. Pakistan is a much younger country than India because the Pakistanis produce a lot more babies than we do now. We've really got our act together on population growth. Pakistanis haven't. So their population is younger. So in these, while their population may be about, say, 1/6 of ours, the fact is that in the next 20 years, they will add 6.4 crore million to their working wage group, whereas we will add 16.5. So that's almost 40% of India's. That's striking for Pakistan. Bangladesh will add 1.9 crores, 19 million. China, and that's the important part, China will add only 11.4 crore. So India will add 16.2, China 11.4. And that's the reason you see by 2040, this basic number between China and India changes. China comes down to about 98 crore, a little over 98 crores. India goes above 109 crores. And that's where this difference is coming from. Another country that adds quite a lot to this working wage group is Indonesia, that is 26 crores. Quite a lot, but not that much, still less than half of what Pakistan's adding. I am deliberately using that because Indonesia is about the population of Pakistan, not the same, but about the population of Pakistan. And the Philippines will add 1.9 crores. So the countries that will be competing going ahead for manufacturing jobs and manufacturing economic growth will be India, Pakistan, Bangladesh, the Philippines, Indonesia. China, on the other hand, will be slowing down because they will now need to move towards more high-tech areas and maybe services. So Indian advantage is India has tons of lots and lots of active age people who will need jobs today. Trin says in one of her tweets, who will need jobs today and tomorrow. So India has got the human resources. India has got the horses already. India just has to put together the cart. So this is the classically virtuous situation. We say don't put the cart before the horse. In this case, the horse is there. So we have to put the cart behind the horse for the horse to start working. Then India has some problems. India has problems. India has a strength of quantity, but India has some challenges of quality. And when you want to understand this, see this slightly more complex but detailed graphic. And I will try to break it down. So this graphic will remain on my screen for some time as I talk. Now, this is the strengths and quality has been broken down in various heads. So first is very simple, literacy. Now, literacy data in this chart comes from UNESCO. So UNESCO applies the same standard to everybody, to every country. So you can see on literacy, India will get better, but compared to China, India will be way behind. India will be, say, 74%. China will be 97%. Again, a country very high will be Malaysia, 95%. Other countries will be here and there, but 74% for India compared to 97% of China is a big disadvantage. Then you look at English skills. Now, normally, we would have thought that India would be acing everybody in English skills, particularly acing China in English skills. The data here comes from an organization called Education First. Now, this data tells us that India is not too bad on English skills. It's like it's a score. The score is 496, but China will be, in 2040, China will be 520. So China will be doing better than India even on English skills. You know why this is happening? Because too many state governments in India and others now are now privileging their own state language. And there is a whole Hindi mood in the country. So we are now teaching our people less of English. We are moving towards Hindi medium, Telugu medium, etc., etc., Tamil medium, etc., Punjabi medium, in any case, has ruined the employability of the Punjabis. And you have seen stories, and I've also spoken about it, all these struggles Punjabis now have passing that English examination, basic English examination called IELTS, without which they can't get their dream visa to Canada. English skills, India is 496, China is 520, and Malaysia, as you would expect, is 547. These are also the two countries that have very high, almost 100% literacy, and that helps them in the area of English skills. Then you see engineering skills. That's very important. Engineering skills, India will not do that badly. In fact, India will be near the top. India will be 4.6. On an index, this is a score, China will be 4.7. So India will be almost the same as China. Malaysia will be higher at 5.3, and that will have consequences that we will discuss. Again, the next point, now this is a bit tricky, regulatory restrictiveness. When you see regulatory restrictiveness, this has also been divided into sections. So the first is FDI inflow restrictions. So the lower is better, and India does brilliantly there. India 0.2, which is the same as China, 0.2. Again, that is where, say, just for a comparison, if you just want to see, say, Pakistan, it's 0.4. Pakistan is also a major country in Asia. Again, labor market regulation, this is reckoned in terms of weeks of salary that a working employee gets. So India is low, India is 11.4. China is 23.1, and then Malaysia, Pakistan, even Pakistan's higher, which is quite a surprise and good for the Pakistanis if they do well on that parameter. Then this part of the chart ranks these countries by summing up or by netting off all these factors. So these rankings, which are done by Natixis, which is the organization that Trin works for, where she is a senior economist for Emerging Asia. These rankings are basically, on one side, ranking in supply of labor for basic industries, and on the other, ranking by way of availability of labor or manpower for capital intensive or advanced industry or advanced labor. If you see the first list, which is ranking in supply of labor for basic industry, India ranks at number one. So what does it tell you? It tells you that India has a big manufacturing opportunity in not very high-tech manufacture. So India is number one, the Philippines is number two, Pakistan's number three, interesting. Vietnam is number four, Bangladesh is number five, Indonesia is number six, China is number seven, really low, because China has now moved on from low-tech manufacture or moving on. By 2040 would have moved on quite decisively. Malaysia is number eight. It is the lowest because Malaysia has the highest quality manpower, highest quality human resources for education, literacy, engineering skills, knowledge of English, etc., etc. Again, if you want to see it capital intensive, so very logical, the country that is last in labor intensive, that's Malaysia, is number one, is the tops in capital intensive. But India is not doing badly. See where India features there. India features at number two. So excellent. Number one for labor intensive, number two for capital intensive. So India is in a good place. China is number three on capital intensive. The Philippines is number four, and then so on and so forth. Pakistan, in fact, is number five on capital intensive. Now, if you want to sum up for India, India's literacy is low, could be much better, but its skills in English language are decent, good, and engineering skills. Those become India's strength. Again, India's regulatory environment is still not as good as it should be. So time has now come for India to address it. So what this tells us, and see the next chart, this tells us that India is now set in a very good place for basic manufacturing reshuffling. So India now has to move towards more manufacturing industry, not very high tech, because this labor, these horses are available. So that is the cart that India needs to build. So again, if you see this graphic, this is the Natixis Labor Supply Attractiveness Index. And if you see this graphic, what comes above the line is better and what comes below the line is worse. And this is done on the basis of all these factors. Again, if you see, the factors are size of labor supply, wages, regulatory restrictiveness, growth of labor supply, literacy rate, and then an aggregate. And again, you can see India is not doing badly, and India has a lot of opportunity for improvement. And this analysis tells us that this underlines the fact that possible segments that India could grow into are both high tech and labor intensive. We told you India ranks first in labor intensive and two in high tech. So India has the best of both worlds. And there, if you want to look at the sectors, then Trin's analysis suggests that the sectors where India will be the strongest among Asian countries going ahead is telecom equipment, right? So that's very important, and that is a big opportunity. That's more than $500 billion. And then again, interestingly, leather and footwear, Pakistan is the most suited or in the best position. Now, I don't want to get lost getting distracted, but the fact is that we might be creating a little problem there for ourselves by undermining our leather industry because of the whole issue with animal carcasses and the fear of cow slaughter, etc., etc. Now, what's the most unpleasant surprise in this is India's share of manufactured goods exports. So, if you want to see India's share of labor-intensive manufactured goods exports, these are goods which employ a lot of people, can be garments, can be shoes, things like that. India has only 2.5%, 2.5% of global exports of highly labor-intensive, low-tech manufactured products. What's the number for China? Guess. China has 32% compared to India's 2.5. That's almost 13 times more, 1-3, precisely 12.8 times more. That is quite a revealing piece of statistics. Now, India at this point has a lot of people coming in the workforce. So as the Chinese get older, and Chinese move into more skilled, high-tech jobs and services, India has the potential or has the opening to take these manufacturing jobs or create this manufacturing job. If you want to look at overall manufactured goods exports, what is India's share globally? Guess, and you will be shocked, or maybe you will not be shocked because you know it's very low. It's 1.45%. So India has only 1.45% share in the global manufactured goods export market. Overall manufactured goods, not just labor intensive, all manufactured goods. Little Vietnam, which is less than 10 crore people, that is what? That's about 7-8% of India's population. They have 2% share of global manufactured goods export market. So think of the headroom that's available to India and think of the missed opportunity. Now, to sum up, India also has many advantages. For example, India's FDI inflows over the past 5-6 years have been very robust. They've seen the highest percentage growth year upon year for any of its Asian peers. That's very good. It's also the period in which China's FDI inflows on a net basis have actually been declining. So if you see this graphic, the figure for China is actually below the line. So this is one of India's strengths. India is doing a few more things right. India is building infrastructure. India is reforming its power.